commitments. Thank you.
Anybody want a decaf?
Can't make a bracha. All right, well, so let's begin. So today's daf is Pei Beis. We're going to begin. We left off the last couple of lines on Pei Aleph Amud Beis. No bracha on the decaf. So five lines up from the bottom. Shasat Sir or Morias Potus. Remember, again, the Mishnah discussed the idea that if you drink certain things or eat certain things that are not ro'i la'achila, or ro'i l'shtiyah, not fit for consumption. So lemais, again, they do not count for violation of Yom Kippur. So the Gemara says, ha chometz chayiv. So you see from here, interesting, the Mishnah's examples were brine and liquefied fish innards. So what do you see from here? That if one were to drink vinegar on Yom Kippur, that one, in fact, would be chayiv. Masnisin money, whose opinion does our Mishnah reflect? Rebihi. Our Mishnah reflects the view of Rebbe. What did Rebbe say? Desanya Rebbe Omer Chometz Meshives HaNefesh. Rebbe said that ultimately vinegar has the ability to restore the soul. Rashi says, Meshives HaNefesh Umevatel Es HaInui, and is able to go ahead and negate, take away some of the affliction of Yom Kippur. So apparently drinking vinegar, Rebbe says, Lemais, again, could actually go ahead and settle one's mind. So the Gemara says, Darash Rav Gidl Bar Menashe Miberi Neresh. So Rav Gidl Bar Menashe once gave a shir. Rav Gidl Bar Menashe from Beri Neresh was once giving a shir, and he said, "In halacha k'Rebbe, the halacha does not follow Rebbe." Or in other words, cancel that for some reason.
Take two.
Cool. Everything's going on.
It's all about the grounds.
So what happened to Rav Gidl Bar Menashe gave the shet, Halacha does not follow Rebbe. L'shana, the next year, Nafke Kuli Alma, Mazgu V'shasu Chala. What happens? Next year, everybody went out. What did they do on Yom Kippur? They drank vinegar. Why did they drink vinegar? Because Rav Gidl said that the Halacha does not follow Rebbe, and therefore, L'maisa, it's permitted to drink vinegar on Yom Kippur. To which the Gemara says, Shamar Rav Gidl ve'ikbid. Rav Gidl heard this and he was very upset. Amar, he said the following, Amar de Amri Ana di Evet. First of all, when I said the halacha doesn't follow Rebbe, and therefore again, vinegar is not considered to be a fit food item for consumption on Yom Kippur, I was saying that b'dieved, meaning ex post facto, if you drank it, you're not chayiv. L'chatchila mi'amri, do you think I actually gave permission for people to drink in l'chatchila? Furthermore, Amar de Amri Ana Purta, even though, and I said, when we spoke about drinking of the vinegar, I said you could drink a little bit of it. Tuva mi amri, did I ever give permission to go ahead and drink a lot of it? Furthermore, emar da amri anachai. And when I said that the halacha doesn't follow Rebbe, you could drink vinegar on Yom Kippur, that was undiluted vinegar. Mazug mi amri, did I allow you to go ahead and drink it diluted with water? Okay, so points are both like halacha lemaisa, we don't paskin like Rebbe, meaning if you drank vinegar on Yom Kippur, halacha lemaisa, that is not considered as if one has actively violated the fast. But that being said, clearly one lechatchila is not permitted to go ahead and drink vinegar on Yom Kippur, says the Mishnah. Hatinokos ein me'anin osim Yom Kippurim. We literally are both like, we do not go ahead and require children to engage in inui, to engage in the afflictive practices of Yom Kippur. However, avam lechanchin osan lefneshas. So remember again, we already saw one exception to this. The one exception to this was what? Was shoes. That we have children, we make sure to have children not wear leather shoes, if possible. Because again, remember we saw that's an afflictive practice that does not in any way impact them. All the other practices potentially could impact their growth. could impact their health. The wearing of leather shoes will not. And therefore, the minhag is that the halacha is that we have children wear leather, non-leather shoes. However, the Mishnah over here is talking about the other inuyim. Aval mechanichin osa lifnei shanah, b'yoshul shiyu regilim amitzos. But what do? We educate children. I will say, literally translated, this means within a year and within 2 years. We'll see what within a year, within 2 years actually means, in order that they become habituated in the performance of mitzvah. So in other words, Rabosai, we don't want the child showing up at the age of 12 or 13 for the first time, never having done anything for Yom Kippur, and suddenly having to fast 25 hours. So the process of chinuch is that we have the child fast a couple of years prior to Yom Kippur in order to get them ragil, in order to get them habituated to this process. Says the Gemara. Hashta b'fnei shnasayim mechanchil lehu b'fnei shalom miboy. So Gemara asks a very simple question. The Mishnah said that we get them used to it. We're mechanich them to fast a year or two before they're obligated. So the Mishnah said, I don't understand. If you're telling me that we're doing it 2 years before, do you need to say a year before? To which the Gemara answers, Amar Rav Chisda lo kasha. Yes, we do. You know why? Ha b'chole ha b'bari. Everything depends on the nature of the child. If the child is healthy, so we begin training the child to fast 2 years before he's obligated. If he's a little bit weaker, then we don't want to push him to fast, and we only begin to train him a year before he's obligated. Amar Rav Huna. So if we don't say the following, we'll say, Ben Ches u'Ben Tes mechanchin oso l'shos. We'll say, listen to this. When a child is 8 years old and a child is 9 years old, we educate, and I'm going to tell you the punchline of this. This is talking about a girl. When a girl is 8 years old or a girl is 9 years old, we go ahead and we train her l'shaos. L'shaos means what? We'll see this later on. That she fasts for a number of hours, which means she's going to eat her meals, but we delay her normal meal times by a little bit. Ben yud u ben yud aleph, mashlimin midrabanon. At the age of 10 and the age of 11, we have her go ahead and complete the entire fast. But we do that midrabanan. So obviously when she's 10 and 11, she's not yet obligated to fast. But those the year or two, that's again, depending if she's healthy, then we'll start at 10. If she's not as healthy, a little bit weaker, we'll start at 11. But those are the rabbinic years in which we will have her fast the entire time. Ben Yud Beis, however, by the time she reaches the age of 12, mashlimin midoraisa. Then obviously by the time she reaches the age of 12, she has to fast biblically. Bitinokes is referring to a young girl. A girl, okay. Rav Nachman says, Ben Tes, Ben Yud, Mechanchen Os L'shos. So here Rav Nachman says, now I'll give you the punchline with this. Also, Nachman is referring to a boy. Rav Nachman and Rav Huna are saying the same thing. Just Rav Huna is talking about a girl, Rav Nachman is talking about a boy. So Rav Nachman says, when it comes to a boy at the age of 9 or 10, Mechanchen Osan L'shos, we go ahead and we train him to fast for a certain number of hours, and we'll see what that means in just a bit. Ben Yud Aleph, Ben Yud Beis, Mashlim V'Dirabanan. When he's 11 and 12, he should complete the entire fast. Again, also remember, 11, it's really 11 or 12. If he's a little bit weaker, we'll wait to have him fast until he's 12. If he's a little bit stronger, we'll have him fast right when he's 11. That's Om V'Dirabanan. However, Ben Yud Gimel, once he reaches the age of 13, Mashlimin V'Doraisa. So Rabbi say, obviously at that point, he is biblically obligated to fast, and this is betinok. Tinok, you know, we normally translate tinok as a baby. Here it means a child. This is not a male child. Okay, so we'll say, so that's the position of Rav Huna and Rav Nachman. Essentially, we'll say what ends up happening is that you have a four-year process. So let's say going with a boy at 9 and 10, we're going to have him fast for shos, which means we're going to have him fast a couple of hours. And at 11 and 12, we're going to have him complete the entire fast, midrabanan. And then at the age of 13, he'll begin to fast midoraisa. For a girl, just push everything back 1 year, same schedule. All assuming the child is strong enough. If the child is not strong enough, then we'll only bump it back 2 years instead of 4 years. Says the Gemara, Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Hashlama dirabanan leka. We'll say Rabbi Yochanan does not have this idea of fasting midrabanan, of fasting an entire day midrabanan. Rather, Rabbi Yochanan's model is like this: Ben Yud Aleph mechanchin osa l'shos. Now, again, Rabbi said this is going to be by a girl, right? So when Ben Yud Aleph, when she is 10 or 11, Mechanchen osa l'shaos. So ultimately, you have her fast for a number of hours. Ben yud beis mashlim midoraisa. By the time she gets to 12, she already has to fast midoraisa. So we'll say, according to Rabbi Yochanan, we do not have this idea of fasting the entire day midrabanan. Rather, again, we have the chinuch model. The chinuch model demands that you push off your regularly scheduled meal times by a couple of hours. Again, the Gemara will be specific what that means. But lamais, and then you go right into real regular fasting. So we'll say, look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says over here, actually not yet, I'm sorry. So the Gemara goes like this, Tinan. So the Gemara quotes our Mishnah. Hatinokas ein ma'anin os hatinokos ein ma'anin os b'yom kippurim. So the Mishnah said what? That we do not cause the children to take on the afflictive practices of Yom Kippur. Meaning, we don't force children to fast on Yom Kippur. Aval mechanchin osan lifnei sha'ah lifnei shna sayim. But we educate them, we train them for a year or two before Yom Kippur. So says the Gemara, Bishlam al Rafun of Rav Nachman. So according to Rav Nachman, this makes sense. Lifnei shana v'lifnei shna sayim. Lifnei shana lidivrehem. V'lifnei shna sayim. And if you look over here, the Hagos Habach changes this. Lifnei shna sayim lidivrei Torah. So we'll say, listen to this. So according to Rav Huna and Rav Nachman, the way to read the Mishnah is like this. Mishnah says, we don't force children to go out and fast on Yom Kippur, but what do? We educate them, we train them for a year or two before. Now we'll say, what does a year or two before mean? So according to, remember, in Rav Huna and Rav Nachman's model, what's happening? For the 2 years prior to the child reaching the age of Jewish adulthood, the child is already fasting the entire day, midrabanan. So according to Rav Huna and Rav Nachman, what 1 or 2 years means the following. 1 year before they become chiyuv daraisa, and 2 years before they become chayiv midrabanan. Because remember again, let's say for the boy, Rafun and Nachman are having him fast when he's 11 and when he's 12. So when he's 11, that's 2 years before he becomes chayiv midoraisa, and when he's 12, when he's 12, that's 1 year while he's still chayiv midrabanan. Okay. However, El Rabbi Yochanan. Kasha, but according to Rabbi Yochanan, how do we understand? So let's remember, according to Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan doesn't have any model of having children fast an entire day before they reach the age of majority. According to Rabbi Yochanan, all that's going to happen is what? A kid will fast for a couple of hours, but that's it. So how does he understand the Mishnah? Amar lecha Rabbi Yochanan will say, Mai shana oshtaim. What does it mean, a year or two? Samuch lepirkan. It means before they reach the age of adulthood. And therefore, Rabbi Yochanan will say the following. Rabbi Yochanan will simply say that lemaisa, all the Mishnah is saying is, yes, we're mechanich them. But the Mishnah says, what does it mean to be mechanich them? According to Rabbi Yochanan, we train them to fast for a couple of hours prior to reaching the age of adulthood. Tashmar, we'll say first wide line. Ditani Rabbi Bar Shmuel, Tinokos ein ma'anin osa b'yom kippurim. So Rabbi Bar Shmuel said, Tinokos, children, we do not force them to fast on Yom Kippur. However, aval mechanchin osan shana oshtayim samoch lepirkan. But we mechanich them, we train them for a year or two prior to reaching the age of adulthood. Bishlam Rabbi Yochanan. This makes sense according to Rabbi Yochanan. Necha el Rav Huna Rav Nachman kasha. But what will Rav Huna Rav Nachman do with this statement? Amri l'charabanan, the rabbis will say, my chinuch nami diktani. What is the chinuch that we are referring to over here? Hashlama. The education that we're referring to over here is the education referring to fasting the entire day. Natural, because also remember, the assumption is that chinuch could mean number of hours. Fasting number of hours, according to Rav Huna and according to Rav Nachman, that training for a number of hours is not happening a year or two before the child reaches the age of adulthood, but rather when? 3 or 4 years, okay, thank you, 3 or 4 years prior to adulthood. So what do they do with this price? And to which they will respond, no, chinuch could also mean that phrase chinuch of educating them or training them could also refer to having them fast the entire day. Ay, v'hatanya, but we learned, ezo chinuch, that what is chinuch? Hayar ragil, l'rosai. So now this doesn't only answer what chinuch is, this also answers what shaos means. Ay, hayar ragil le'echol b'shtei shaos. If a child normally ate at 2 hours into the day, ma'achilin oso l'shalosh, then what would we do? We would delay the mealtime of a child by an hour. B'shalosh, similarly, if a child ate at 3 hours into the day, ma'achilin oso ba'arba, we push his mealtime off by an hour. Amar Rav. So we'll say that, so therefore you see from here that chinuch doesn't mean hashlama. Chinuch doesn't mean fasting the entire day. Rather, chinuch means shows. It means hours to which the immerse. Amar Rav bar Ula trei chinuchei havu. There are two types of chinuch. Well, so another thing the Gemara says is that the word chinuch itself can convey two different ideas. Chinuch could mean ultimately fasting for the entire day, and chinuch could also mean shows. Chinuch could also mean fasting only for a certain number of hours. I will say, I'll tell you, halacha lemaisa, bless you. Halacha lemaisa, what do we do with children on Yom Kippur? So in Siman Tav Reish Tes Zayin. So the title of the siman is Haktanim. When should children begin to fast? Listen to what the Shulchan Aruch writes. We'll just do this for literally 1 minute. So he says, Katan ben tes sharim shlemos, u ben yud sharim shlemos, mechanchin oso l'shos. So when a child is 9 years old or 10 years old, so what happens? We begin to train them to fast for a certain number of hours. Ketzad, hayurag yilechol v'beis shos b'yom, ma'achilin oso b'gimel, hayurag yilechol b'gimel, ma'achilin oso b'dalit, Lefi koach haben mosifin la'anos oso b'shos. So we'll say again. So this is for a boy. When the boy is 9 or 10 years old, we want them to begin fasting, even if it's just for a couple of hours. Ben yud. And again, he says everything is based on the abilities of the child. Ben yud aleph ben zocher ben nekeva misanin umashlimin medivrei sofrim kidei lechanchan memitzos. At the age of eleven. Ultimately, so here's what's interesting on both sides, that the Shulchan Aruch does not distinguish between boys and girls over here. So the Shulchan Aruch says that the model for training children is boys and girls at the age of 10 and 11 fast for a certain number of hours. By the age of 11, both boys and girls are also going to fast, full fast, mashlimin, full fast, midrabanan, in order to train them in mitzvah. So again, 9 and 10 is what we'll call regular chinuch. 11 is really a mitzvah midrabanan to have them fast in order that they're trained. He goes on, he says, bas yud beis v'yom echad, once a girl reaches the age of 12 years old in one day, or ben yud gimel v'yom echad, shevir shtei saras, farayim glom chal mitzvos, u'mashlimim min ha-Torah. So, okay, so then halacha l'maisa, for obviously for a boy then, his 12th year will also be another year of chinuch, of mashlimin midrabanan. He'll have to fast the entire day. But obviously at the age of 12, so a young lady is already going ahead and fasting midoraisa. I'm going to say, the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah goes ahead, he says, actually very interesting, he says, katan shu pachos mi ben teisha, but a child less than 9 years old, ein ma'anin osu yom kippurim. We do not let them fast on Yom Kippur, kedei shelo yavo lidei sakana. In order that such a child will not bring themselves sakana. Which is interesting. Now, Mishnah Berurah comments, he says that a child like that shouldn't even delay mealtime. So less than 9 years old, already a child is too young even to delay mealtime, should just do it now. So halach l'maisa model comes out like this. Less than nine, do nothing. It appears, according to Shulchan Aruch's model, that once we get to 9 and 10, we train the child to go out and fast for a certain number of hours. 11 already is midrabanan, an obligation for the child to fast the entire day. For a boy, that'll be his 12th year also. For a girl, ultimately, by 12, she's already fasting as an adult. The Ramah comments on this, and he says, obviously, all of this is based on the child's ability to do so. Child has a medical condition, or child is just weak, right? So halacha l'maisa, obviously, then when we get to the age of 11, we really do want the child to try to go ahead and fast appropriately in order that the child is at least somewhat prepared. But l'maisa, again, anything before 11, if the child is too weak, we let it go. Says the Mishnah, ubra shericha. If a pregnant woman smells food on Yom Kippur, and what happens? And she says, I need some. Rashi says, bless you. Ubar Sheiricha is very interesting. He says, Ha'ubar Meriach Reach Tavshil. The child, now we'll say, it tastes something very interesting. Michael, what do they call the smelling ability?
Olfactory.
What is it? Olfactory? So it's amazing. Tell me if this is correct. I read this. I'm assuming it's on the internet. So that clinically now that they are showing that the olfactory bulb, right, develops in utero even sooner than we thought. And so that the child is actually able to smell certain things that the mother is able to smell. So it's interesting over here. You ever hear this?
No.
I saw it. Google it. Google it. I'm telling you. So look at Rashi. Rashi says over here, he says, what happens? Uber sheiricha. What happens when the mother smells something? Uber mariach reach tavshil. So the child in utero smells the food. V'humis avelo v'im eina och l'shnein misukane. So essentially what's happening over here? The mother develops a very intense urge. A very intense urge, a craving, to the point that there is a concern that if she does not satisfy this craving, that she could, God forbid, put herself and put her baby in danger. So what's the halacha? So ma'achilin osa ad shetashid nafsha. So the halacha is, we give her to eat until she feels okay. Meaning you don't argue. In general, Klal Gadol don't argue with a pregnant woman, right? But certainly, again, on Yom Kippur, when she feels that she is in a state, in a serious state, if she feels that she needs it, we give it to her and we give her to eat until her soul is, until her health is restored. Cholef, someone is sick. Ma'achilin osal pibikir. Rabosei, so if somebody's sick, and let's say now we'll have to define exactly what's happening over here. We said, Mishnah says, if someone is sick, we feed him based on the advice of Bikin, of doctors. Rashi says, Bikin, im yomru shnei rofim shumasukan, im eino ochel. If two doctors tell us that if this person does not eat, he's going to be in a state of danger, we go ahead and we feed him. Now, we'll say, we'll have to see what to do with this case, because is this a case where the chola is saying, I need something to eat? And then we still say, I'm sorry, we need independent corroboration. In which case, that's interesting, because in the case of the pregnant woman, as soon as she says, I need it, we give it to her. So we'll define this case in the Gemara. But the point over here now, person's chola, and if two doctors say that he needs to eat or he's going to be in sakana, we feed him. In sham bikin, and if there are no doctors present, ma'achilin oso api atzmo. Then lemaisa, we follow what the chola wants. If the chola says, I need to eat, then lemaisa, we go ahead and we feed him, based on his own directive, at Shiomar Dai, until he tells us enough, i.e. until he tells us that he is okay. Says the Gemara, Tana Rabbanan, Ubro Sheiricha Basar Kodesh. So we'll say, if a woman went ahead and smelled sacrificial meat, O Basar Chazir, or she smelled Chazir. We'll say, what's the common denominator between Chazir and sacrificial meat? They're both Asr. So she smells meat that she is not permitted to have. And she says, I need it. She says, I need it. So what do we do in such a situation like this? Tochvin la kush berotav. We take kush is like a splinter, like a toothpick. We take a toothpick, and what do? We dip it in the gravy. Umanlichan lo apiha. And we give her a taste. We give her a taste with the hope that that will settle her mind. Look at Rashi. Kush palach. A piece of wood. Tochvin la kush berotav shall osa basar. Umotzisaso. So we go ahead and we put the toothpick in the gravy, and we let her suck on the toothpick with the hope that maybe that flavor will settle her mind a little bit. In this yashvadai tomutov, if this works, and her mind is settled, great. Ve'im lav, and if not, ma'achilin osa rotav atzma. If that doesn't work, then what do? Then we give her the gravy itself. Now, I will say, what we're going to see over here is we try to give her the lesser prohibitions first. So the first thing we do, if the little taste is not enough, we go ahead and we give her the gravy. If giving her the gravy, because we'll say the assumption is at least the gravy is a little bit better than eating the basar, eating the meat, the prohibited meat itself. In this yashvadaita, if the gravy works, great. Ve'im lav, and if not, ma'achilin osa shuman atzmo. We'll say, if the gravy doesn't work, then we can feed her even what? Even the forbidden fats. We'll say, obviously, it doesn't mean we go from gravy to forbidden fats. But the Gemara is making a point over here. Lemaisa, if these initial measures do not work to calm her down, then we give her whatever she needs. And even if she needs to eat the actual basar, she needs to eat the actual meat, she needs to eat the actual shuman, we give it to her. Why? She'in l'chad davar shomim b'fnei pikuach nefesh. Because lemaisa, again, when it comes to pikuach nefesh, nothing stands in the face of pikuach nefesh, meaning when there's a threat to life, we do whatever we have to do with three exceptions. Chutz, me'avod zara, gili arayos, u'shvichos tamim. With the exception of idolatry, immorality, and murder. Meaning, when it comes to any other prohibition, if it's a choice between violation, ultimately, and commission of the act, we commit the avera in order to save the life. However, again, if the only way one could save one's life is through idolatry, immorality, or murder, then halacha lemaisa, we command the person to give up their life rather than to go ahead and transgress these things. So the Gemara says the following. The Gemara Nabo says, very interesting sugya. The Gemara is going to go through, how do we know that each of these things, avodah zarah, gilui arayos, shlichus damim, are what we call yeharig val yavor. How do we know that these are things that you have to be killed rather than violate? So avodah zarah minalan. How do we know that you have to give up your life rather than worship avodah zarah? The sanya, Rebbe Lozer Omer, the pasuk says, v'yahavto es Hashem alokecha, v'chol levavecha, v'chol nafshecha, v'chol maldecha. You have to love Hashem, your God, with all of your heart, with all of your soul, v'chol maldecha. Now maldecha means what? Maodecha means resources. All of your ma'od, everything you have. So the Gemara is like this. Disanyo, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, in ne'emar b'chol nafshicho, lama ne'emar b'chol maldecha. If I know that I have to love God with all of my heart, then why does it say that I have to love God with all of my resources? Does all of my heart not cover my resources as well? V'im ne'emar b'chol maodecha, and if Torah tells us to love God with all of my resources, lama ne'emar b'chol nafshicho. Then why does it have to say I have to love God with all of my heart? To which the Gemara answers, a very profound Gemara. Im yesh lecha adam shegufo chaviv alav mimamono. Lekach ne'emar b'chol nafshech. Rabbi says, what does it mean to love God with all of your heart? It means that even if you have to give up your life for love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you must be prepared to do that. So there are some people whose life is more important to them than their money. So had the Torah just said b'chol ma'odecha, I wouldn't have known that I have to give up my life for God. I would have just had to give up my money for God. Therefore, it says b'chol nafshecha. V'im yesh lecha adam shemamonu chaviv alav migufo. And Rabbi Osai, there are some people who their money is more important to them than their life. There are some people like that. Therefore, had it just said b'chol nafshecha, I'm ready to give up my life for God, but give up my money that I'm not so ready to do. L'kach ne'emar u'b'chol ma'odecha. Therefore, it says you must love HaKadosh Baruch Hu with all of your resources. So most like, what the Gemara understands over here is that this is pasuk is the source for giving up your life for idolatry. The Torah says v'yahavta Hashem Elokecha, you have to love God. What does love God mean? Love means that you have no other gods. You only have HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, again, if somebody is going to force you to worship idolatry, your love of God demands that you love Him b'chol nafshecha, with all of your heart. And therefore, even if you have to give up your life, I have to stand ready to do so. That's Avodah Zarah. Gilui Arayos u'shvichus dam minalam. How do we know that one has to give up their life rather than violate immorality and murder? So the Gemara says, "Disanyo." Rabbi Yomar Bosa says, "Very interesting. It's a very interesting proof." Ki ka'asher yakum ish areihu uratzachol nefesh, kein adavar hazeh. So Bosa saying, this pasuk is talking about a na'ara ha'me'urasa. If a girl was betrothed to marry a man, and then she was violated by another. So the Torah says, that to the girl who was violated, you don't do anything to her. Because since she's betrothed, technically speaking, she's a married woman. So she obviously did not commit an act of idolatry. Adultery. Right? She did not commit an act of adultery because she was violated. Ki ka'asher, I'm reading to the pasuk, ki ka'asher yakum ish are'il uretzachol nefesh. Because the same way when a person rises up against another to kill them, kein hadavar hazeh, so too is this thing. I will say it's very interesting. What the Torah essentially is saying is that rape is the equivalent of murder. Rape is the equivalent of murder. The same way that when a person rises up against another to kill them, when this man violates this woman, he is like a rotzeach. He is like a murderer. So look what the Gemara says. The Gemara says, "V'chi ma inyan lamanu merotzeach l'nara murasa." Now it's interesting. Why does the Torah juxtapose these two ideas? The Torah didn't have to throw this in here. All the Torah had to tell me was what? Is that again, the girl was violated, and therefore there's no act of adultery that occurs on her part. He, the violator, is subject to a death penalty, but she, lamaisa, is not subject to anything. So why do you have to throw in this piece about rotzeach? V'chi ma inyan lamanu merotzeach l'nara murasa? Why is it that, what did we learn about Rotzeach from Na'ara HaMe'urasa? Says the Gemara, Harei Zeh Balelamed V'nimtzolamad. So interesting enough, this came to teach us, but instead we learned something about it. Ma Na'ara HaMe'urasa Nitein Lahatzila B'Nafsho. Rabbi say, just like when it comes to Na'ara HaMe'urasa, you are permitted literally to save her, even if what? even if you have to kill the man who is about to violate her. So we'll say again, to save a woman from being violated, you are permitted to kill the potential perpetrator. Af rotseach. So too, when someone is about to murder another, and we'll say, if you look at the Masoras Hashas in Vav, he adds in the last phrase over here, Tzarech Lomar Nita Natzila Benafsho. So too, we'll say, if I see someone that is about to kill someone else, I am permitted to prevent that act of bloodshed by occurring by how? By killing the potential perpetrator. So therefore, the Torah juxtaposes these two concepts to say that just like you can save a girl from being violated by killing the potential attacker, so too you could go ahead and save someone from being killed by killing the potential attacker as well. Look at Rashi. Rashi says over here, "Mana rahamuras anitin rishus lematzil lahatzil mibeilas zu benafsho shal boal zela hargo achla baaleha." That again, lemaisa, you can go ahead. If a girl is about to be violated, you could kill the guy. We both say this is even before he engages in the act. I see that he's going to do something to her. I could kill him before he attacks her. Kidichsiv. Now, we both say the Gemara didn't tell us where we know that from. But how do you know that if a man's about to attack a woman, that you could kill him in order that he doesn't attack her? Oh, because the Pasuk says, look in Rashi, Ein Moshia La. Because it will say the Pasuk, when describing this attack, says that what? There was no one there to help her. What do we infer from that? Ha Yesh Moshia Yoshiena Bechol Tzide Teshua. What do we see from there? What does it mean when Torah says there was no one to help her? The inference from that is what? That if there was someone to help her, you could help her by any means necessary. Even if that means actively killing the attacker.
How does that teach us the reverse, that you have to give up your life?
Oh, we're not there yet. We didn't get to that yet. So now, this is only the first part of the argument. We're going to get to that piece in 1 second. So I will say, remember, here's what we have. So we have, by Na'ara HaMa'urasa, the idea that Lamaisa, you can go ahead and save the girl, even by taking the life of the other. The Torah then introduces the Rotzeach into this mix. And the Gemara understands that introduction of the Rotzeach is to teach us that so too, when someone is in mortal danger, you could save them from that mortal danger by killing the potential attacker. Now the Gemara says, now, here we go. Furthermore, marotseach yeharig va'al yavor, and just as rotseach, so we'll say now that we have this connection between rotseach and na'ara ha'me'urasa, the Gemara says, well, let's take that comparison further. Then just as rotseach yeharig va'al yavor, just as when it comes to murder, Rabbi will say, murder is something that you must allow yourself to be killed rather than to go ahead and kill another. Af na'ara ha'me'urasa yeharik v'al-yavor. So to na'ara ha'me'urasa, meaning gili arayos, is also yeharik v'al-yavor. Now, we didn't answer Ben Sion's question yet, because I could ask what? Well, how do you know that rotzeach is yeharik v'al-yavor? So I'll be on Amud Beis. But before we get to that, I want to show you a very important Rashi. Look what Rashi says. So we'll say again, so just follow this limud here for just a moment. So part one of the limud is, remember, we now have a juxtaposition between Na'ara HaMa'urasa and Rotseach. And the juxtaposition teaches us the following. Just like you could say the Na'ara HaMa'urasa by any means necessary, including killing her potential attacker, so too you can go ahead and you could save somebody who's in mortal danger by killing their potential attacker. The Gemara says, fine. And just as Rotseach is a harig v'al-yavor, which means you have to sooner give up your life rather than commit an act of murder. This is obviously be murdering someone innocent, right? Not killing the attacker. So too, by Na'ara, which represents gilei arayos, you have to sooner give up your life. Rather than what? Rather than violate. Now look at Rashi, the last Rashi on the daf. Af na'ara murasa. What does it mean? Im yomru ba'ol arusas chaverecha. For example, God forbid somebody threatens a person and says, violate that woman who's betrothed to your friend. Meaning violate a married woman. Or be killed. The halacha is, yeharig va'al yavor. The halacha is, you have to be killed and you should not violate. I will say this, Rashi points out a very important qualification here. This qualification is really amplified in Tosos. Now, if you'll notice, this is quite a long Tosos. Tosos begins on Pei Beis Amud Aleph and extends the entire page on Pei Beis Amud Beis. We probably won't have a chance to get to it this morning. But this Tosas is all about this particular topic. Look what Rashi says. Aval hi, but a woman, eino mitzuva limtsor es nafsha. A woman, Rabosai, is not obligated to give up her life rather than engage in an act of immorality. Dehi eino osa klum. because she can be absolutely passive in the act. The karka olam ba'alma. I will say karka olam means passive. V'raya, v'raya l'davar, and the raya to this is Esther. So we'll say it's a very important yisod. The idea of yiharik v'ayavar, giving up your life rather than violate something, what's the logic behind that? That by giving up your life, you will not have to violate the aveira. If l'maisa, again, you could say, I'm giving up my life, but you could be forced to engage in the act anyway, then there is no obligation to give up your life under those circumstances. So when it comes to Gilei Arayos, a woman could be violated against her will. Because she could be violated, so she could say, I'm giving up my life. It's not going to make one shred of difference. She will still be violated by the individual who wants to engage in this immorality with her. Because of that, she's not obligated to go ahead and give up her life for Gilei Arayos. And both said, the Raya is Esther. We don't have time for her now. This is a sugya in Sanhedrin. Tosos discusses this. That's why what Tosos points out is the Gemara Masecha Sanhedrin discusses, when it discusses how Esther Malka was able to with Ahasuerosh, interesting enough, the Gemara doesn't discuss the issue of Gilei Arayos. The Gemara discusses the issue of Chilul Hashem. Because the idea over here is that everyone knew she was Jewish, at least the Jewish people knew that she was Jewish, and how was she able to live in what perhaps could have been a state of Chilul Hashem? But the Gemara never asks about Gilei Arayos, because the Maase again, she was not obligated to give up her life for that. Amud Beis. V'rotzeach gufei minolam. And how do we know about Rotzeach? So also remember, the Gemara made a statement that just like Shvichus Damim is Yiharik Val Yavor, so too Gileras Yiharik Val Yavor. Someone says, where do you know? How do you know that murder is Yiharik Val Yavor? How do you know that? Well, this is amazing. The Gemara says, Svarahu. Bless you. To be honest, it's just logic. What's the logic? We'll also listen to this. Dehahu de Asalek Hamei de Rava. There was a man. It was a man who came before Rava, or in Mitzvah Shai changes it potentially to Rava. Amarle Mar Doroi Katle Leplanya Veilo Katlin Alach. So a man once came to Rava and he said to Rava, "Listen, the governor of my city came to me and he said he gave me an ultimatum. I either have to kill Ruvain or the governor is going to kill me." And Rava said, "Amarle Nikdalech." Rava said, "I'm sorry. You have to let the governor kill you." Velo tiktol, and you may not kill another. Why? My chazis didama didach sumak tfei. Who says that your blood is any redder? Dilma dama dahu gavra sumak tfei. Maybe your friend's blood is redder than yours. The Rabbi say, what does that mean? If you look at Rashi, Rashi says, my chazis didamach didach sumak tfei. Rashi says, kilomar, my daitech le mishre milsa, mishum vachai bohem, velo shiyamus bohem. Taima Shaldavar, Lefi, Shechaviv. So we'll say, remember, in general, why is it that one is permitted to violate the precepts of the Torah? Why? Because in a life-threatening situation. Because the Torah gives us another mandate, V'chai Bohem. Because Shemar Hu values our life more than anything. And therefore, again, if there's a choice between ultimately living, or I should say dying, and upholding the precepts of the Torah, and living, and Kadosh Baruch Hu himself tells us, violate, I want you to live. But says Rashi over here, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Tibat Laha Mitzvah V'yichyeh, Aval achshav sheish kan yisrael neherag va'mitzvah betela lama yitav ve'eni hamakom la'avur amitzvaso lama yihye dama chaviv alav yosem edam chaver chayisrael. So we'll say, what was Rava saying? Under normal circumstances, I'm giving a choice. Let's say again. So I'm giving it. Someone puts a gun to my head. Violate Shabbos or die. So I violate Shabbos. Kodesh Baruch Hu says v'chaybam, because God wants me to live. In this case over here, somebody's going to die. Somebody's going to die. Who says that my life is any more important than the others? The mitzvah of the chai bohem, of living, of violating the precepts of the Torah in order to live, applies when it's a circumstance between me and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So God says, I'd rather you violate because I want you to live. But v'chai bohem does not allow me to take the life of another in order to what? In order to go ahead and preserve my own. So we'll say it's amazing. So the idea that murder is yiharik val yavor is not learned out from a pasuk, the Gemara says. Well, it's kind of learned out from a pasuk. It's based on v'chai bohem, but it's svara. So the Gemara says, hahu ubra. So the Gemara tells the story. Ahu Ubra, the Archa. There was a pregnant woman. So I'll say that's the end. That's the end of that sugya. It's a very dramatic sugya that the Gemara just introduces here in the middle. So the Gemara says, Ahu Ubra, the Archa. There was a pregnant woman who went ahead and smelled food on Yom Kippur. And what happens? Asu lekamei de Rebbe. They came up for Rebbe. They told Rebbe what was going on. And she obviously desired the food greatly. So what happened? Rebbe said, Amar lehu zilu lechushu la dimu dikipurihu. Go whisper in her ear that it's Yom Kippur. Meaning, just gently remind her that it's Yom Kippur and see if that settles her mind. Lachushule, what happened? They went ahead and they whispered to her. And what happened? And she calmed down. So apparently reminding her that it was Yom Kippur, who calmed her down. Rashi says, V'ilchishe kibla es halachisha shepasak over mitavaso. She accepted the whisper. Apparently the child in utero calmed down. Kari ale, so Rebbe said about this, B'terem etzrecha b'beten yidaticha. Literally, being as Avosai, that from Yirmiyahu, before I created you in the womb, I knew you. Which Avosai, really what the pasuk means is, before you left the womb, you were already kadosh. So what Rebbe was saying was, you see the kedusha of that child, that even that child in utero, when the child, so to speak, hears that it's Yom Kippur, the child calms down. Nafik minei Rabbi Yochanan. Avosai, that child was Rabbi Yochanan. What happened? Hahu ubra. Actually, we're going to stop over here. We're going to stop over here for today. We'll pick up Emirat Hashem with this last story tomorrow. Kivanoch, you're going over to the Shiva home?
Yeah.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. Interesting one.